think I might be back, you know. I know this is the fourth time I've had this conversation, but I think I might have found the love again.
Yeah, you reckon, yeah. Where did you find it?
On the end of a Jimmy Wilde jab.
That's goodness sake.
Oh, I love it. Oh, fuck, I love this.
Yeah, I was going to say. I always do that. I always go, hang on a minute. Okay, where's my phone? I'm like, oh, it's
oh, yeah, recording. Right,
hello, everybody. Welcome to the UFC Picks podcast.
What? Yeah. Start it.
Yeah. Right. We got all that flexing and you talking about Jimmy's jab and everything. let me just put that iPad down for a minute because I don't need that until we start talking about next week's fights. Okay.
Right.
Have you got a timer on? Are you doing
Hold on.
This?
Let's time it. We've got 20 minutes. Ready?
Okay, go. What do you want to talk about from the weekend? Where do you want to start?
Start at the bottom because I was really happy with my picks, obviously.
Oh, hang on. Bottom of the main card?
Well, I was just going to talk about Zalal and Choi.
Okay.
Which I thought was a fun fight.
There was some good fights on the undercard.
Yeah. And
four decisions in a row, though.
Choi sort of did what we thought he was going to do, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's just a good up-and-coming, solid fighter, a mixed skill set all over the place.
Yep.
I thought he just outpointed Zalal pretty solidly, really. Mm-hmm. Zalal did that, like, shrug off at the end like he didn't understand why he lost the decision, but
yeah,
he lost that fight.
I think when he watches it back, he'll see it. And I think if he watches it back, if he reads the rules and scoring criteria and watches it back, he'll understand it as well. Like, there was a lot of similarities between that fight and the way that the main event played out. For a lot of reasons. And we were discussing this last week with Volkov having just a clear skill set of this is what he does, this is what he's good at. And like he sharpens the edges and he rounds it off and he tidies it up, but he's evolved steadily as that fighter.
Hmm.
With Sungwoo Choi coming from Thai boxing, you can see he's done the same thing with just like his nice fundamental striking skills. And then over him on the other side, same as Zalal, he's skirting the octagon, like trying to find weird angles and giving you weird looks. And it's like someone's got good footwork and then a whole scattering of techniques with no like no glue to hold them together.
Yeah, right.
And with Choi,
you've got so many options then. Whereas if you have a limited skill set and you're really good at it, well, you just stick with that limited skill set. You don't get confused by options, mm-hmm. do you?
Because you know the gears that you shift through. And and like with Overeem, like, I mean, I talked about it on the War Room, how he's got, like, there's been different versions of Overeem and he's adapted and changed over the years, but he didn't look like he had a plan at the weekend, which was, it looked like he had one plan, sorry, and that plan didn't work.
Like I said in the pick show, he just confuses me. Like, he doesn't fight like I feel like he has all of that experience and all that know-how, all of those techniques. He doesn't seem to fight like that anymore. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that was shame. It's not like you just see this, you know, he was Uber-eam and you just see him on his knees at the end hurt, like beat up and hurt, and it's just not nice, is it?
It's not. And that cut was opened again.
Yeah.
And this card started with three featherweight fights, and I would like to see any of those winners face one another. Ode Osborne, I'm going to cover it on Aftermath. That was a lovely little knockout with it.
Yeah.
Flaring of the elbow.
Beautiful.
And Valiev against Sungwoo Choi would be a lot of fun. His kicking game, his grappling game was excellent.
Yeah. I mean, we were all about Valiev anyway, weren't we? But he's,
and it was a decision.
Yeah. He's it's just a good time for those guys that, you know, obviously they're on the undercard, they're on the prelims, but it's healthy down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of talent and, you know, even Zalal coming off worse in that. That's not to say that we're writing him off.
No.
You know, it was a probably below par performance for him, but he's a very solid fighter and he's obviously going to come back from this and, you know, the experience will do him good, even if it's the fact that, look, you thought you were doing all right in this fight and it ends up you weren't and you're on the bad end of a decision,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to modify your fight behaviour to make sure this doesn't happen again.
So you look at Zalal's record, right? He's 10-4 now. But all five of his fights in the UFC have been the distance and they've all been unanimous decisions. So he's either running the show or he's not able to keep up.
Mm. I look for that a little bit now.
You reckon?
Yeah, off some conversations we've had, I look for that a little bit in that, what are they in there to do?
Mm-hmm.
So you're either just tough and no one can finish you and you never get finished and you always take people to decision, or have you got that thing? Have you got that thing where you're going in there to finish this fight, to win a fight, not to compete in a competition.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Shame
for Molly, hey? seemed like it was just a ball of energy and emotion and pretty poor energy strategy for sure.
She should have been stuffing those takedowns. And it was, the thing is with that fight as well, you watched Lara's first fight in the UFC against Carol Rosa, who also was surprisingly good against Jocelyn Edwards. I'm big on Jocelyn Edwards.
Yeah.
And I that was an impressive performance. But from Lara, like, you watch her first fight in the UFC and I just thought to myself, like, as long as you stuff the first two takedowns, there's not much there.
Yeah.
But if it hits the floor, then she's a problem. But like, that's always been the gap in Molly's game.
Yeah, I feel like though Molly's, she had a skill differential in a stand up, but she was in a rush to put that in place. Whereas if she truly trusted the fact that she had better hands than her, she could have just sat back and trapped her a little bit and just waited and not rushed to put that game in mm-hmm. front of her, because rushing it and trying to get those hands on her, just it's so hard to moderate that distance, and then you just end up in the clinch, and then she negated her advantage a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on for her, and maybe that was part of it, but it does seem like it is also a bit of a habit that she needs to address.
I feel like it might be time for her to step outside of her normal training routines and get some different perspectives and maybe even train with some different people, get some different sparring partners and stuff in there, someone that can push her a bit more.
And that's a whole nother, we're trying to keep this to 20 minutes as a recap, but that's a whole nother conversation we could have about. It's actually come up in a few comments, I think, on some of the war rooms, is about how do you feel about staying with your core group, being loyal to the guys that got you where they got you, but also, being smart enough to go out and get outside information to objectively look at your game and stuff. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with loyalty, but at the same time, there's nothing disloyal about trying to better yourself.
Yeah.
Like in martial arts, not everybody has the answer.
No.
And in mixed martial arts, very few people have all the answers, if anybody. Right. And you might go to somebody and get their perspective of something, and that might be a tried and tested perspective for that individual. It might not work for you. And there's nothing wrong with going, this is not working for me, I'm going to have to go. And like, I've trained with a Thai boxing coach that was a very similar build and moved very, very similarly to me. And his style was just, it was just so easy for me to pick up.
Mm.
And then I trained with another Thai boxing coach who was shorter and more powerful and more scrapping and brawling and getting inside. And as much as I wanted that element of my game, it just didn't suit me.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I had the other Thai boxing coach to fall back on with all that knowledge that had already worked. Whereas if I'd have gone into that gym first, I might have just been banging my head against the same wall over and over again. Because like what for whatever reason, physiologically, it might just not suit me, that style.
This is a little bit of a random comparison, but for instance, when you're teaching someone how to squat properly, it depends how long your femurs are. Because some people just, if you have really long femurs, you are not going to squat the same as someone that's basically got dwarfism. You're going to squat a slightly different way, and that's
the word squat then.
Well, that's quite a reduced way of looking at it, but it's the same principle behind it. My bias is because when a fighter is so close and closed into what they're doing, the coaches should be saying, "You need to go out." That is a very comfortable and confident coach that can go, "Listen, I love you. I will be here for whenever you need me. Go visit this guy for 6 months. I think this guy might have something for you."
Yeah.
That's a different level of ego controlled coaching. When you just where your skill set is and you know where they could benefit from people going.
Yeah.
Tough.
You'll not meet many coaches
like that.
No. Especially not when they've got a UFC fighter that they might be handing off to a different gym. But I get it, but It also doesn't look good on that coach if they've got the fighter that, is consistently losing the same ways.
In similar patterns, yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's get on to the main card.
Dariush is streaking again, isn't he?
Yeah. It was a very safe performance from him, though. After the conversation we were having about intention, and I've just written a piece for Lessons of War on intention as well. When you're watching that fight, there were certain moments in it, and I'm like, hang on a minute. What's his intention in this moment? Is his intention to pass the guard, to land heavy strikes, to try and instigate a conclusion? Or is he at the moment just trying to get through this next 30 seconds? And there was a few of those moments in there. And like the thing is with Diego, He's got all the skills and all the ability, and over five rounds, that might be a different fight.
Yeah,
I've fought twice now.
I noted down that I'm not sure whether there would be a conclusion to this fight if you did it over 10 rounds. The way they were fighting, it would just seem to be every single round would be very, very similar until one of their gas tanks gave up, maybe.
I just kind of feel, I mean, I'm going to go back and watch it one more time, but I kind of feel like over five rounds, Fahir might start to come on strong. Because it's similar to what Gilbert Burns has to do to Usman. He has to keep him working and keep him moving.
Mm.
But the benefit in that is that he doesn't have to get through, you know, he doesn't have to work hard enough to make three rounds work. He's got five rounds to work, which an additional 10 minutes.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Is massive.
Yeah.
I would be interested to watch that over five rounds, and I wouldn't be surprised. I just hope neither of them lose their momentum. Because, Beneil Dariush absolutely needs a bigger opponent next. But Fahir's right up there as well.
Mm.
Like, you look at the guys he's losing to, and he's not losing, like, was it Poirier knocked him out, but then everybody else is beaten by decision?
Yeah.
Or rather, Dariush is beaten by decision twice. First one was unanimous, and it was, you could see, but I could see improvements in Diego this time around, but also that is a little bit of a chaotic style, which over 15 minutes can be fire blanketed a little bit.
Yeah, but you're going to get caught with that extra 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You're going to get caught out, aren't you?
Yeah, especially if you start to get tired. And there were moments where Dariush was kind of hanging on. And I know that it doesn't make sense for Oliveira, but I would love to see Fahir against Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
As an all Brazilian guy.
Dariush was fired up afterwards saying that he people don't want to fight him and they don't see it as it's a sort of a lose-lose if you agree to fight him. You should beat him and you don't get any credit if you do, and you know, but he is dangerous. Yeah, he was a bit fired up, wasn't he? Interesting to see what they do with him next.
He is, I mean, the problem is that he's never animated.
Yeah.
He's always kind of, you know? Yeah. And he's never like, motherfucker, I need some fights. I need some higher ranked opponents. I need some respect on my name. Yeah.
But that's the thing with respect, right, is no one gives it to you. You have to go out and get it.
Like, Musasi got to that point. Musasi got to a point where he was getting really frustrated. And then he had this one golden press conference before he went over to a different organization where he was just trashing everybody. He's like, people must be stupid. People must be stupid.
Yeah. It'd be fun to see what they do with Dariush next.
Yeah.
He's probably earned probably a name, hasn't he?
He's got to. He's been lingering for a while, hasn't he? I'm just going to pull the rankings up. They've not been updated until tomorrow, I believe.
Right.
But we'll have a look where they are anyway and we can speculate. So where is it? They always talk about cookies and never deliver any of these websites. So where is he? So Fahir's at 10. And Dariush is at 13, but obviously he's going to move up.
It's going to change a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, Dariush against Hooker would be a good fight. Dariush RDA would be a good fight.
I like Dariush Hooker.
Mm.
But that's not a bad way back in for Hooker as well. That's not a fight that's going to go the same way necessarily, is it?
It's not someone that's going to club him to death.
Yeah.
It's going to be a technical power.
That's going to be a technical one. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that'd be a good fight. I think that makes sense. Dariush, I mean, you know, aside from that, he's looking up towards the top of the division, and most of these guys are just not going to open the door. I mean, you might be able to get Tony Ferguson in there with Dariush, but he knows that a Conor McGregor fight is still available for him. Like, people aren't going to open the door to Dariush if they see other opportunities.
No, which is reaffirming what he was sort of saying. You know, he's not stupid. He understands that he's high risk and low reward.
Yeah, but you do get caught in this kind of range in the rankings. Like, you can look around. Like, Anthony Smith kind of got to this stage as well, where he's like, he got to a title shot, but there are a lot of guys that get like a part way up the rankings, and then they just keep banging their head on the ceiling. Cowboy's a good example. Mm. You know, they keep banging their head on the ceiling and they can't get any further. And they're the guys that open the door for the guys lower down.
Yeah.
Like Dan Hooker might be in a position where he has to now open the door to someone lower rank because of his record of recent.
That probably makes the most sense. Felder's not gonna fight him, is he?
Felder's not stepping back in unless it's a fight that's worth doing.
Yeah.
I like and he's Quinter. In wicked shape at the moment, Felder is. He's training for that triathlon. He's, he had a bike in his room in Fight Island.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I had a guitar, so it kind of balanced,
same, same,
you know.
Same, same. Both training.
I got sore fingers from it.
Manel Kapp.
Yeah, that was a fun fight.
He sort of looked good.
He did. I mean, it wasn't a good fight for him to come into the UFC on, because Pantoja's a bit wild and very tough and durable anyway and skilled everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, Kapp looked better than I thought he would. I thought he might freeze up a bit given the fact that it's UFC. And I know he's fought in Rising, but, like, Rising's a massive event. But UFC's been established for so long that people have dreamt about it for a long time.
It's the big show for a reason.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that comes with that. Mm-hmm. I thought he was, in some respects, he was a little bit unlucky because he seemed a lot more efficient with what he was doing. But then Pantoja just appeared to be doing a lot more.
Yeah.
I actually looked at the strikes landing, but I wouldn't imagine there was a massive difference between the two things, the two fighters, really.
I'll see if there are. I mean, like, my overall feeling was that Pantoja controlled the space better. But that's aggression alone anyway. You know, he's that's just his kind of preset.
I think if you come in on your first fight...
No, the stats are way different.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we've got... And this is significant. Well, there's not a great deal of difference between significant or total. Significant strikes, 74 of 149 for Pantoja and 49 of 91 for Kapp.
Kapp.
2 of 7 takedowns and none of 1 attempt for Pantoja. But...
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty close, right?
Yeah.
And if you come in...
How are they divided?
First fight in the UFC against a legit contender and you perform like that and, you know, you come off worse, but you've got a future in that division. Mm-hmm. He's going to cause some problems, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's some people that are going to struggle to deal with him.
Well, you know, given the
very
fact that
fast.
He was... Yeah, he's very fast.
Very, very quick.
He's a good matchup for other people in that division. There's some really interesting fights in there for him.
Good acquisition.
Yeah.
Good for everyone, really.
Yeah.
Good for the UFC. Good for Kapp, Kappe.
That's divided up. So Pantoja clearly won the first and second round. 24 strikes to 12 and 29 strikes to 16. And he got taken down once out of 3 attempts in the second round.
Mm.
They both failed to take down the first. But then the third round, Kapp landed one more strike at 36. So it was 20 of 50 for Pantoja and 21 of 36. So he was more efficient in that last round. And he got 1 of 3 takedowns. So he finished strong, but only had 13 seconds of control.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a win without winning, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's probably done himself some good credit, but, you know, the wins that count is winning. He's getting your hand raised, isn't it?
I think he set his level in the division.
Yeah.
And, like, if you look where Pantoja is and you say, right, he gave Pantoja a decent scrap. So you could drop him in there against in 6, 7, or 8.
Yeah.
So you're looking Brandon Royval, you're looking Kai Kara France, Matt Schnell would be a fun fight. Tim Elliott would be dynamite because he's very awkward and unusual. And even further down, you know, like the guys further down, Dvorak, Tyson Nam's a good striker. That'd be fun. There's a lot of good fights in this division for him. But to drop him in there against someone like Kai Kara France, who's coming off that loss to Brandon Royval, that's a hell of a scrap.
That's fun. That's a lot of fun. Like, you've got 3 minutes to get through the co-main and main.
Go on then, what do you want to talk about?
My boy just did his thing, didn't he?
You talked about Corey.
Corey's...
What about Guido? He's a maniac.
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
Corey.
Yeah, yeah, no. We missed that. But Corey's in a funny position, right? So you know, he's obviously lost to Sterling, who's in position for the title fight.
Yep.
Would you run that back again and give the winner... And then, but Aljamain is going to be like, hold on a minute, I subbed him in the first round.
Yeah,
I'm not going through that again.
Sterling's got the title fight. The question
he's
is,
just going to wait for the winner of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I mean, it does him a lot. It does Sandhagen a lot of favors if Sterling wins, because that's the obvious immediate rematch. Given the fact that Corey,
I mean, that's a given, right? If he wins that, surely goes straight in there.
It makes sense. Peter Yan looks like he might try and hold out for Dillashaw, but that's a name fight, you know. That's the reason why
he
won that.
It's
easier to market. But then with the knockouts that Corey Sandhagen's landing, if he keeps creating noise, and his eyes were wild in the post-fight interview when he was talking to DC,
coming for people, isn't he?
Yeah, I like him. He's good, man. It was rough to see Frankie get knocked out like that, but it wasn't.
We like Yan, right? We rate him really highly, but Corey's going to cause him some trouble.
Yeah.
he's a lot different body type to him. You know, he's awkward and long and highly skilled in a lot of areas. That top of that division is.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sanhagen's got good stance switching under pressure as well, which is what Peter Yan does. And Yan's not got a high work rate.
Mm.
He's got a strong presence, which is what makes it feel like he's doing a lot. But I just don't think he's going to get that same kind of respect from Sanhagen. Plus, he knows he can see his way through rough early rounds if he needs to. I think it's a hell of a fight.
Plenty of fun to be had up there. No.
I mean, you know, we can't discount the fact that Sterling's in there, but I mean, Sterling could catch Yan something clean. He's so quick. He's so explosive. He's got great grappling scrambles. I just kind of feel like Yan's
he's very considered, Yan, isn't he? Yeah. He's very, like, considered, very hard to ruffle him with pressure or make him do stuff he doesn't necessarily want to do.
He's very calculated. Yeah. It's like Lomachenko, but Lomachenko's got there's a cockiness and a flair to Lomachenko, or at least what we've seen so far in his career. Whereas Yan's just business.
A bit stoic and he's just like,
I remember telling a good story about is he a master of sports in boxing?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, to get a master of sports in boxing, you have to have about 150 amateur fights. Like you have to go through the ringer to get to that stage. But it was some kind of championship he was talking about, and he was like favorite to win gold in this whatever it was, European international championship, and got into a fight the night before and broke both of his hands. Still showed up to compete, but they wouldn't let him fight.
Nice,
but he's old for his age.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. You know seasoned. What I mean? He's got seasoned.
We talk about, like, if you want to be elite in your sport, you need a PhD in your sport. He's literally got a master's in his sport. He's well on the way to his PhD.
I wish we had that over in the UK.
Yeah.
I wish we had that over here. Like, you could gain a master's level. I mean, you can obviously if you're, you know,
yeah,
if you not, study him, but it's not.
Yeah,
the same,
not in
is it?
Not in actual competition though, can you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they're the last one. Volkov is just. He's a big, imposing man, isn't he? Who you just when he hits hard, and you can see he hits hard.
And really I think that's it as well. I think it's his physical size, especially in the apex.
Right.
Especially in the apex, it's a small octagon. It's not a huge space, and he's a big dude. Like, you stand in front of Stefan Struve and you're like, he's tall. Like, there's a lot to him. You know, he's a big, tall, rangy guy.
But he's thick too, isn't he? Like, he's not like...
He's got big legs.
Classic sort of string bean type thing. He's a thick, thick, giant human.
Yes, he is.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it just seemed to me like Overeem had one clear plan, which was to move southpaw and then keep darting across the centre line and trying to throw that straight left. And he had like three narratives that he could play off that. It was either dart in and hit and then circle off back to orthodox and then southpaw again. Dart in and clinch a knee with his opposite side, or dart in and throw the left hand and then go into like a trip. He tried all three of them at different occasions in the fight and none of them worked. And the point in the first round where he got, I'm going to break it down, which is why it's fresh in my brain. The point where he got knocked down in the first round was because Volkov had figured out that movement pattern that he kept repeating over and over again. He's a very, very intelligent fighter. Mm-hmm. He read over him so well.
One of the commentators said, punches like that will turn you into an NCAA wrestler real quick. I can't remember which one it was, but yeah.
Yeah.
He did a good job, right?
He did.
It's a dangerous opponent for him. I think we said on the show the other week is that it's almost a pivotal moment for him, because if he loses that fight, he's back down in the bottom end of that division, which is tough and thankless, really. But now he's elevating himself up to putting himself in a bit of contention, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's going to be a handful.
He is, absolutely.
No doubt.
You've got to have fight-changing power to really cause him issues like we saw with Derek Lewis. Because otherwise he can just back you up and outpoint you.
Yeah.
And he's smart enough to not do it at great risk. Like, where is he right now? So Volkov, so he just beat Overeem. So they probably switch places and he'll move up to six. He'll move up to five from six. But then you've got Blades Lewis this weekend. You know, I mean, they could quite easily change positions. Like Derek Lewis could catch Blades because, I mean, you know, Blades is an excellent wrestler, but he does have to close distance, and that's been problematic for him against Ngannou. Like Lewis could quite easily replicate that. He's a very tough, durable individual. He gets up with heavyweights clamped onto him, stands up like it's nothing. So, like, I mean, you know, Derek Lewis might surprise everybody this weekend. If he does, then, you know, that's a rematch that you could argue for Volkov to get him into title contention immediately.
Mm.
Whereas, who else? I mean, yeah. Rosenstruik could be a really good technical kickboxing match. And then you've got Stipe against Ngannou right up at the top of the tree, ready for the belt.
These rankings in the top, you know, the top eight or nine in each of these weight categories, it's just, you know, the future is so bright, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've got some fun stuff coming up.
Yeah. I mean, the fight makes sense is the winner of the Blades-Lewis one, because there is two losses in the UFC.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Either way,
I enjoyed it.
He's going to want to revenge that, isn't he?
Definitely.
Avenge that, sorry.
Should we cross over then?
Yeah, it's 23 minutes. We're over already.
Let me check that we're still recording. Yes, we are.
What are we at? 2:05.
Okay.
8.
I'll have the wraps put.
Nice.
UFC Picks, sure. Brought to you by UFC Picks app.
Beautiful.
Which is ready to go this time around.
Yeah, so check this out. Level it up a little bit. Sorry about that.
And we opened it up and you went, oh no, they've put the early prelims on.
Yeah. I wasn't informed that we were doing the early prelims.
Mate, there's like veterans on these prelims. Okay, I'm the fat controller today. I've got the iPad. So I can, I will guide us through this.
You can navigate our way. Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? There we go.
If you've not got this app, go and get it, because it's a lot of fun. It's really interesting. And you did really well this week with the full
If you get the app, go and have a look at the leaderboards, because we're in a healthy spot right now.
And we're going to get all the money that we win, we're going to gather it up and do something cool with it, aren't we? We're going to do something charitable with it.
We'll find something selfless to do with that.
Of course. Yeah, okay.
For sure.
Let's have a chat about this first fight.
Gillian.
And don't call her Gillian Anderson, because I've made that mistake too many times. Gillian Robertson against Miranda Maverick. This is a banger to open the card up. Like, Maverick really impressed me in Fight Island when she fought Jojua. She's calculated. She's intelligent. She's vicious with her striking, elbows and knees. She's got good Muay Thai. And it's the same story as Max Holloway. She got an eye injury, and she had to stop sparring entirely. Right. So now she doesn't spar in training camps. They specifically pick who she works with. She rehearses things. Okay. She goes through things. She works her timing, pad work, etc.
It's funny, off the back of that Max thing, I was thinking how many like 20-something-year-olds are like, oh, I don't do sparring anymore.
Yeah,
but whoa, hold on a minute. He's had years of sparring to get him to the point where he can pick and choose whether he does sparring or not.
Exactly.
Don't just write off sparring. That's as close, you know, that's the most transfer you're going to get from training to competition.
Yeah.
Just be careful about who, which way you go.
About who
that.
You're working with.
Right.
Yeah. That's it's just being smart about it, but... I mean, you know, it's not like she's not doing any physical contact training. She's just not sparring with people that are going to maybe injure her when she's not getting paid to fight.
Yeah.
And that's a mentality of some of the old gyms. You know, like I've been in some of the best gyms in the world. I've been in one of the best gyms in the world, watching two UFC fighters spar with 10-ounce gloves on, and the coach nudged me and went, "Another one for Sherdog."
Yeah, right.
Like, that's your responsibility to stop them acting like that and like raise them both up to be good instead of filtering out which one's got best potential.
Yeah.
Because you're going to damage them both in the process.
Maximize the individual, not in spite of your training. You know, a lot of the times people succeed in spite of their training because they happen to be gifted or driven or something like that, but that's not coaching.
No.
Coaching is creating an environment everyone can thrive and flourish. The guys that are destined to be the best become the best, and everyone is maximizing their capabilities. You know, that's the true sort of test of whether when you've got a team right, is everyone is as good as they can be.
Yeah,
not at the detriment of some others, for sure.
For sure. So my rundown of this one, assuming that Miranda Maverick is having the same kind of training camp that she had before, which was a very cerebral one, is she's going to know that Gillian is uncomfortable unless she's on the ground and will even choose to be in bad positions on the ground to be uncomfortable there instead of being uncomfortable on the feet.
Yeah. Take a disadvantageous position on the ground just because you're more comfortable there and work your way to something advantageous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a, ends up being a bit of a classic, right? If Julian can get to the floor, you know, that's clearly a path to victory. Mm-hmm. Can she do it?
Maverick's got a decent ground game though, if I remember right. In fact, it might be on my, I can't pull it up because of my notes. I'm sure Miranda Maverick's got, she's graded as well though. Like right. She's like a blue belt on the ground. I think she may be a brown belt or something. She's got a decent schooling everywhere, but she's also like a very physically imposing fighter as well. She's in great condition. Yeah, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt.
Yeah,
it's all in there. It's all in there somewhere.
Yeah,
in the house.
And you got there quicker than I could get there on Google.
So you know, 4-fight win streak. She's got a win over Pearl Gonzalez, who's a UFC vet, and that's a 3-round unanimous decision performance of the night in Invicta. She won the Invicta flyweight tournament with a submission over Deanna Bennett, who's another UFC veteran. I think we need to keep an eye on her. PhD student, Old Dominion, studying industrial psychology.
Okay.
I don't know what that would be.
I don't understand the industrial part of that one. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll tell you what. I know you're not making picks, but guided by your knowledge on this particular fight, we'll lock in the Maverick.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying that Jillian's not, she's not a lethal fighter, but she has to get the fight into her range in order for it to be, you know, a comfortable night. And I still don't think it's a comfortable night, even if she is grappling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Maverick comes in this, you know, she's coming from a Muay Thai school. She's got a brown belt Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So she at the very least knows how to reverse engineer what's being thrown at her. And just physically, she's very imposing. And I mean, she's got some deltoids on.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, if you're locked up with her, she's going to be able to like lift you and shook you off. And if she's managing her training the way that she is, she's most likely doing the same thing with her conditioning, which means that she's not coming in burnt out. She's going to be fresh and strong. And Jillian's like up and down at the moment. She's not in a great place consistently, you know?
So it's just the place you want to be, isn't it? If you can find consistency in your routines, like we are products of our routines.
Yeah.
If you can find consistency in that and then start getting consistency in performance, then you're just getting that, you're in that flow and you're in that zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, if we're looking at patterns, Jillian's 1-2, lost one, 1-2, lost one, 1-2, lost one. So she might be in line to win two here. So
fulfill the prophecy.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
Yeah.
Gabe Green, Phil Rowe. So Phil was contender series. I did a bit of moving around with him actually at the PI. He's like a long range, tall, kind of tricky fighter. He drifts quite nicely from one stance to the next. He's got a few different techniques and tools. Gabe, on the other hand, is a bit more of a, I'm going to walk you down and trade like boxing range, but he does complement it with a lot of kicks on the way in.
Why is Rowe being out? Is he being like injured or is he just getting cancelled?
I know, I think injuries. What's the topology?
Because he was contender series, right, and then he had his debut cancelled a couple of times.
Yeah. I think it was injuries. I think he's been out for a while due to injuries. I know he's been around the PI a lot, and I think that's probably because he was doing physical therapy there. Mm. He's had 3 cancelled bouts, according to this. So March, April, and then August, all 3 have been cancelled. And he withdrew.
Frustrating time.
Event cancelled due to coronavirus was the middle one. So he withdrew from the first one, coronavirus cancelled the other one, and then he withdrew from the August. So he's...
Yeah, he must be pretty frustrated, right?
Yeah, very.
Maybe Gabe will get the brunt of those frustrations.
Mm-hmm. And he's good at playing the long game as well. Like he's not he had a rough first round. Who was it he fought? Is it in his last fight? He had a rough first round. He stopped the guy in Leon Shabazian, like got dropped in the first round, got hurt, got chased down, and was able to get out of that first round and then finished him in the third. It might be that kind of fight with Gabe because he looks like physically, it looks like he packs a lot of power.
Mm.
And like I said, he's like, as he's walking down, he looks like a boxer as he's walking into range, but then he starts throwing like kicks after kicks after kicks. if you've got a long range guy that's got long stance and he's backing up and circling away all the time, sometimes just the intention of kicking their legs and their body is enough to keep them backing up, and then you walk your way into punching range.
I think we'll go with Gabe.
Some really good chokes on his record as well.
Yeah.
That's 1, 2, 3, 4.
He's 9-3 and 7-2, aren't they?
Yeah.
Relatively similar.
More than 50% of his wins by Renekin choke.
Mm-hmm.
And his UFC debut was the first time he's been the distance. There's another little fact for you as well. So if I'm Roe coming into this, I'm playing the long game with this one.
Yeah, take your time.
Yeah, whereas if I'm Gabe, I'm trying to close him down, kick him up as much as I can, keep him up against the fence, box him up, level change, slam him to the floor, take his back, choke him. 6 rear naked chokes on a record.
You should do game plans.
Right.
You should analyse things and do game plans.
Maybe.
Let's go with Gabe Green.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll put him in. We'll lock him in.
I can't believe this one's on the early prelims. Ricky Simone against Brian Kelleher. So Ricky Simone's a good wrestler. He's got good basics, good nice clean striking skills, good clean boxing combinations, stays covered. You know, it's a very, very fundamentally sound style. Hammers low kicks in really, really powerfully to the lead leg, and has got, as I said, great wrestling to back it up. Kelleher's a killer with guillotines.
Right.
Like, it doesn't even look like he's got the guillotine, and then all of a sudden his opponent's tapping. I'm sure his last fight was a guillotine, and it was seconds. It wasn't a very long fight. He's got a wicked squeeze, but then his striking's a bit unorthodox as well. His hands are a bit down sometimes, and he covers angles and darts in and comes over the top. I think this one's going to be dynamite, and it's probably going to be a striking match, given the fact that Simone's wrestling's going to stop Kelleher grappling and Kelleher's guillotines.
Fights.
Yeah.
He's fought some names in there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Kelleher's tough.
Yeah.
He's an underestimated fighter in this division.
34. Good seasoned.
Yeah.
Good seasoned career.
Win over Alcantara, Barao, Julio Arce. Two wins over Julio Arce.
Lineker. Yeah. He's not won against all these big names, but he's still been in there and faced it, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. And that Ray Rodriguez, I'm sure that was a short notice opponent. And he just, the kid level changed into him against the fence, and he just wrapped him and just sat straight to a guillotine and finished it. And he was tapping quick as well.
Tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm going to sort of roll the dice on this. I'm not really too sure. Let's go with experience.
Oh, yeah. Keller.
Yeah, we'll go with experience. Lock Keller in, see what happens.
Nice.
You think that should be further up the card?
I think it should, worthy
of a prelims?
I think so.
Yeah.
Although the reason it might be there on that card is because the early prelims get seen on like normal TV in a lot of places. So they kind of main event each
tactical
card.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
look at
yeah,
the prelims.
Right.
Like you've got Bobby Green, Jim Miller as the main event of, so like two familiar names that are gonna throw down. It's gonna be a good scrap. They've done the same thing with that one. I think Ricky Simone is going to have a power difference. I mean, just look physically at the two of the guys as well.
Right.
I think physically he's going to have a power difference, and that might be problematic for Kelleher. It's a good fight. It really is a coin toss. I couldn't sway you either way, to be honest.
Yeah, go on. Lock him in.
Ricky,
Brian Kelleher.
Ricky.
Let's go.
Okay, prelims.
Yeah. I feel like we've said this every single time we've been on here, but you could sleep on some of these fights. You could sleep on half of this card and think, it's not that big a card. But if you go through them, these are exciting fights.
Yeah.
Really exciting fights.
Yeah, they are.
So we've got Viana versus Martin, right? Mm-hmm. Veronica nearly took Viana's arm home with her.
She did.
Clean off.
She did.
Nearly took it
and
off.
If you were in the arena, you could probably hear me screaming, "Fucking take it home."
hell of a win, right?
Yeah, it was a really good win.
Someone of that with those grappling credentials, that's very, very
it's
impressive.
It's a really good win. Viana's good, and Mallory Martin got a bit of a scare in her UFC debut with she got caught with a punch that she wasn't expecting from Hannah Cyphers. And Cyphers is, she's kind of awkward, and she's a kind of little rocket, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
She's got really awkward movement.
But she catches people.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem like she's a technician of striking, Mm-mm. but she seems to always catch people in her fights. Yeah. She must just do it through power or a bit of timing or whatever. She Malik got dropped hard, didn't she? And, you know, she could have found a way out of that fight. She didn't. She came back to win that.
And she was reeling for a while as well. I mean, it wasn't like she was just dropped and then she was back in the fight. Like, she was recovering for a while, even to the point where she pulled guard at one point. Like, when you pull guard, you know that you're rocked.
Jandaroba put her in some horrible positions, and she just kept working and work through that. I quite like, she's very, very athletic, and she has a certain, you know, I always come back to it. She has a certain flow of her movements that makes her look very, very good. I don't feel like she's great at anything. Mm. She's just good at everything.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have an X factor. She doesn't have a point of difference necessarily. I can't really see her challenging anyone in that top 10. But she's just a good all-rounder. And that might be the level she's at, and she's going to, you know, elevate as she goes. But
I think she's got the way she moves is very comfortable. And if you watch the fight against Hannah Cyphers, although Cyphers does land the big punch and drops her, like, it's quite clear that Mallory Martin's got better movement, better footwork. Like, she's...
But getting dropped was the surprise bit of that fight.
Yeah, right?
You're thinking, oh, she's in control here. You can just see she's moving really nicely, and then she gets dropped, and oh, what? Right, okay.
Yeah, I mean, maybe she's not aware why she's moving, but the way she's moving looks good.
Yeah, yeah, that is...
Maybe that was it.
Awkward
movement again.
Pollyanna.
What's his name? Keith Jardine movement. Hannah Cypher's got Keith Jardine.
Yeah. Awkward enough to hurt you.
Yeah.
I mean, Viana's not there, right? She's awkward.
Yeah, she is.
But relatively effective. She doesn't move her head off the midline particularly well, which makes me think maybe Mallory can catch her.
Yeah, but she will scrap.
Yeah.
I mean, she will scrap. She's only the only time she's lost is by armbar, and the other times have been decisions. And I mean, Hannah Cyphers is tough. JJ Aldrich is tough, and she, you know, she took both of those distance, even though she picked up a loss. But there's no doubt her game is on the ground.
Mm.
There's no doubt at all. I wonder whether Mallory's like physically going to be stronger though, and able to, because she looks more sturdily built.
Yeah,
like she like Viana looks like she would be flexible. She'd look like she'd be a handful on the ground.
Long,
Whereas Mallory looks like she'd be able to just grab you and just pin you up against the fence and hold you there until she's cleared her head.
Yeah.
That was the point of difference between her and Hannah Cyphers, is I felt like Cyphers looked stronger than her. And I think that's why she looked like she was kind of throwing her around a bit when she was rocked. Mm. Whereas I don't know as Viana could throw her around like that. No. She could definitely snag her in a submission, like an armbar that she got against Whitmire, or... you know, take her back. She's got a bunch of Rennick chokes on her record as well. But, like, look at that. Like, she's got 1, 2, 3, 4. She's got 5 armbar wins out of 11 fights. And then the rest of her submissions are all Rennick chokes, of which there are, what, 3? 2.
But she's gonna have to get Mallory to the floor. You know, she's going to have to get her down there. That's the you know, that's the roadblock you get to with these guys and girls who are elite level a jiu-jitsu practitioners. You still have to get them to the floor.
Yeah, it'd
be interesting.
You know, if she's aggressive, if she punches away into the clinch and she catches Martin, then she might find herself being taken down. That might work quite well to her advantage.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with Mallory Martin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like you might have changed your mind.
No, you were swaying me a little bit.
Was I?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
And I don't like to admit that normally. I'll, okay. Yeah, lock Mallory in. Yeah, I think she'll be good.
This is another fighter that's been out for ages. Diego Lima has been out for a long time. Like, his last fight was 2019, October
6th. 16 months.
Yeah.
That's Melbourne, Australia. That's a long, long time, isn't it?
Mm. And look at that as well. He's got 2 split decision losses in his last 2 fights. One to Court McGee, one to Luke Jumeau. And the other thing I will say is Bilal Muhammad... he's been more active. He's always underestimated. And he's been fighting guys that are taller than him almost all of his career. Yep. I mean, he's 5'10 as a welterweight, which is not massive.
I really, really enjoyed it. I think I might have messaged you as I was researching Bilal. I really enjoyed watching him. He is tough. He was completely outgunned by Curtis Millender physically for speed, probably for strength. For athleticism, completely outgunned, and he did not care about it at all.
Didn't care.
did not care about it, fought technically with loads of like dogging him. He sort of won me over with that.
I look at the guys he's fought though. It's almost like they're trying to convince him to go down a weight class. He's fought Randy Brown, who's 6'3". He fought, what's Jordan Meehan? Jordan Meehan's 6 foot. Tim Means is 6'2" at least. Yeah, 6'2". Chance Renkant's got to be over 6 foot as well. 6'2".
Bilal is a badass.
He is.
He is a badass.
I just love the fact that, I mean, what's Millen do? He's 6'3", 6'2". Yeah. Like, all of the guys he's fought, Sato even, oh, I know he's 5'10", Sato, that surprised me. But then Lyman Good as well, he's another 6 footer in, so yeah. Like, he's been fighting big, tall, rangy guys. It's kind of his thing to get inside and rough them up.
Yeah.
And like Lima not being in there for a while, and he's coming off two split decisions, like this space in his game, yeah, to push him around and bully him.
The only thing, as I was watching Diego's going through his sort of the history of his fights, he does definitely seem to have incremented his game. There's some vast improvements in you know, when he fought the Leech, the Leech just seemed to have his number from the offset, really. But he seemed to have really elevated his game. He's, whatever he's doing it right. Obviously, he's from good stock. He's got some good, genetics there with Douglas Lima's Bellator champ right at the minute.
Yeah.
Champ?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. I think with 16 months out, which is a ridiculous amount of time to have out, and I kind of really love Bilal. Yeah. Yeah. He just, you know, as I was watching, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's it. You know, he's tough through this. And then the next fight, I was like, oh, man, he's really tough through this. He sort of did a number on me.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to lock in Bilal. I'm keen for him.
Okay.
I think he's going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, wow. Let me go back. There we go. Yeah. Okay. Vieira against Anthony Hernandez. This is Vieira's fight to shine, in my opinion. Hernandez has got good anacondas, but who compares to Vieira's ground game in the middleweight division, especially now Jacare's not.
He is not much a around. Seriously decorated grappler. And you know what? The first thing I thought of is when I watched him is,
he looks just like you.
Yeah, exactly. Almost, you know, you've took everything I'm working for. he doesn't strike like a grappler. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying he's an elite level striker just yet, but he doesn't strike like a grappler. If you think about when Damian Maia first came on the scene, you're like, oh, you strike like a grappler.
Yeah, still does.
Yeah, but he's clearly got better,
yeah,
right? There's definitely,
for sure,
you know, he's, you know, it's hard for him not to with the amount of time he's been in the game.
Yeah.
But yeah. I didn't feel the same way as when I watched Vieira. I didn't feel like, oh, he's, you know, he's the only way he can win this is by getting this to the floor. But God damn, if he does get it to the floor, you're going to be in some trouble.
He's a monster. And that last fight against Safarov, so it was that March of last year. I mean, he's been out, what, 11 months?
Mm.
If that fight had got to the end of the round, it would have been stopped because of the eye. It might have even been stopped before that because his eye swelled up so quickly. And there was something else that stuck out in my mind. Now, that's just before I divert, looking at his MMA record, it stands out to me that he's being managed very well.
Right.
February 2017 made his debut, then he fought again in August of that year. Then he didn't fight again until March of the next year, and then June of that same year. Then he didn't fight again until June of the following year, and then August of that year. And now he's now in March of 2020.
Good.
Like, the gaps between his fights, and because they probably know of what kind of prospect they've got with his grappling credentials.
Just being smart and test it, go back and train. Go back out, have a little test, see where we're at. Did those interventions we put in place work? Have you incremented your performance? Right, back in the lab. Let's keep going. He's going to be...
Scary dude.
Yeah, he's going to be serious, I think.
7-0.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, which I was going to divert off it a moment ago, is the fact that he's just... Like, the last time he competed was a grappling event, and although he lost to the same guy that he's already been beaten by before, he this time lost by Rear Naked Choke.
When you're that decorated as a grappler and you actually lose by sub, it could potentially play a few games in your head, you know, like this is my bread and butter. This, you know, no one's better at me than this.
Especially when your nickname's the Black Belt Hunter. And he just got hunted himself.
But yeah, or whether he compartmentalizes that and that's grappling and this is MMA, you know, that I would be recommending he did that. I'm not sure whether he could do that or not. It might rattle him, mightn't it?
Yeah, it might a little bit. It might a little bit. But, you know, I mean, Oscar Pejato, he arm triangled Oscar in the second round, and Oscar's a good grappler. And he, you know, coming through that eye injury and the Saperbeg Safarov fight, you know, he's tough, he's durable, he's very, very well skilled. And, I mean, when was that? So that was December 2020. Like, what's he been doing all this time?
Training.
Yeah.
the thing I see for Hernandez is he's very, very aggressive, and I think it might play into Vieira's hands a little bit. He's so aggressive, he's gonna close that distance very quickly, and it's whether or not he can control that he doesn't end up getting tied up, reaped and took down. You know, he seems like he's too aggressive for his own good in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might backfire him a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's a good prospect in himself.
He is. He's had rough fights in the UFC so far, though.
He was a bit outmatched with Kevin Holland. Yeah, you know, I watched that last night and
that elbow.
Kevin just completely beat him for speed.
Yeah. He just looks a bit green to me.
Mm.
I know he's got, I mean, slightly more fight experience as far as MMA goes, but a vast amount of difference when it comes to just competition in general.
Yeah,
and when it comes to physical development,
yeah,
I just think Adolfo Vieira might just be able to just fold him up into a pillowcase and just throw him over his shoulder and walk out. I mean, his nickname is Fluffy, I suppose.
Right,
don't make that connection when I was saying it, but it makes sense now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to come down to range control and whether Hernandez can control himself enough to get his shots off and pick him apart. But I don't see it going that way.
Mm.
I don't see it going that way at all. I would almost certainly lock in Vieira for this.
Yeah. If I'm Hernandez and I find myself on the floor or I find myself in a clinch position, I'm working that swollen eye as much as I can. Because I know it was a while ago that it happened, but damage to that area might swell up again. And like I said, like if it swells up like that, it's the end of the fight. It's a TKO because you can't see out of it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I mean, I'm excited to see that.
I want to see where Vieira's at, you know.
Yeah.
I want to see where he's at right now and whether it gives us a insight into where we think he can go.
Yeah, I mean, 7-0.
Yeah.
He's going to start finding himself climbing up the rankings pretty quickly soon, isn't he? Where are we in the middleweight rankings? Like, Heinisch is just inside the top 15. And he's got a big fight coming up.
Huge. You know, you can see Vieira giving Heinisch some problems.
Yeah.
For sure.
I honestly could see him giving most of those guys in the rankings problems if he gets into his range. We need to see more of his striking.
Mm.
But like, I would love to see
imagine if
he's
gaps in his competition. He's just out boxing and Thai boxing. BJJ, tick, I've got that.
Yeah.
Okay, right, well, I'm just going to focus on all of this.
Well, I'd see him in there against Akhmadov. I'd see him in there against Derek Brunson for sure. Because if you crack Brunson a couple of times, he wants to start wrestling as it is, and he'll wrestle straight into a choke. I think you could throw him up there. Like I said, he looks like he's being well managed, so they're not going to rush him.
This is one of those tester fights. It's like, okay, go do what you're supposed to do here, and we'll move you up the rankings.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just non-negotiable. You got to go out and you got to perform.
Yeah, it's like bite-sized progression.
You can see that narrative. Go do what you're supposed to do, and we'll reward you afterwards. Yeah, definitely lock him in.
Okay.
I'm all about him.
Main event of the prelims. Look at the records on these two guys. 27-11-1 for Bobby Green, 32-15 for Jim Miller.
I just feel like Jim... 2008 Jim Miller at UFC 89 in Birmingham.
In Birmingham. And he's still here now.
And he's still going.
Yeah. And Bobby Green's been around for a long time as well. He covered distance a lot quicker though, Bobby Green. Mm. Like, I remember when he was fighting around the California circuit when I was training in Hollywood. And he was like, all the events, he was taking fights wherever he could, just kind of got that attitude and that style that allowed him to kind of dominate that scene a little bit and got his opportunity.
Have you got his record up there? Look Bobby how many Green. Times he's fought in 2020. You don't see that a lot at the minute.
You don't want Kevin Holland's record.
Right. Still an anomaly, though.
How many times is it?
Four times in 2020.
Nice.
He's been busy.
3-1 as well.
Yeah.
All decisions, though.
Yeah.
Oh, just saying this more and more. And then he's lost 2 decisions before that, and then he won a decision before that. And he's not been in a fight that hasn't gone the distance since 2016.
Yeah. Other than getting knocked out by Dustin, he's had 12 decisions. Win or loss, it's been part of 12 decisions.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That'd be frustrating for me, that would.
Yeah, I like Jim Miller. I've followed him for a long time, and I like him. And I really liked him when he was sort of in his prime and he was angry and he like hit with some heat, didn't he?
Yeah.
And you can see that, with complete respect, you can see that a time has caught up with him a little bit, and he's just not physically, he's not the same as he was. As much as I don't really want to pick against him, I feel like Bobby Green might just have a bit of speed still left in the tank and just beat him to the punch, or beat him to whatever he needs to beat him to. It would be surprising if this was anything other than a decision, bearing in mind probably where Jim Miller's at and Bobby Green's MO is fight to a decision.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously very difficult to stop. I can see Bobby Green taking a decision here.
I could agree with that. I mean, yeah. Decision's the safe bet. Jim Miller could drown him and grind him out, but he would have to use a lot of wrestling to do it. And Bobby Green's very difficult to hold down.
Mm.
He's got weird footwork, so finding the way in to shoot is difficult. So Miller would have to use his striking to do that. And then the weird angles that Bobby Green comes at.
He's a good counter-striker, right?
Yeah. Just because he's got the intention to fight. It's not like he's technically great. You know what I mean? It's like his striking's not clean.
Yeah.
But I think that actually plays into his advantage, especially with guys like Jim Miller.
Becomes unorthodox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he throws with intention and he like swings his arm, so like when one arm's hit and the other arm's creating momentum,
yeah.
You know, he's a very awkward fighter to deal with, and I think you might be right at this stage. I think he might just be on his toes and picking Jim Miller apart with his jab and, you know, mugging him off and jab stepping in, and you know, a few scrambles from Jim Miller might be able to ground him, but I just don't think he'd be able to hold Bobby Green down. But then I'll give you a one for instance where Jim Miller wins. He comes out. He slips a punch and grounds Bobby Green immediately. Then in the scramble when they're both dry, because you know Bobby Green don't warm up. You know Bobby Green don't.
T-shirt off.
Yeah.
Walk in.
That's it. Nudge me when it's fight time. Scrambles up his back and chokes him out.
Mm.
Who did Jim Miller do that
to? Yeah, he's got history, hasn't he? He's got precedent for that.
There was someone he did that to. I'm seeing it playing through in my head and I can't put a face on the fighter. Guillotined Clay Guida.
Like that. Jim Miller,
Jason
Gonzalez, hands
Alex White.
Jim Miller and his hands are folded over and he's slipping left and right and rolling.
Might get his lead leg eaten up a lot by kicks as well. But it was the Alex White fight.
Mm.
He came out and just was on him, and the fact that he was on his back and dry, was a problem.
Tough. Yeah, lock Bobby Green in. Like I said, I particularly want to pick against Jim Miller. He's much respect for him.
Okay.
So
now we're on main card.
Bobby might beat him.
We've not even been looking at this screen. I'll do it on the next. Here we go. Main card. Right. Pitolo against Marquez. Another fight that's been out for ages.
Ages.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so he had that wild 2018, that wild fight with Darren Stewart, didn't he?
Yeah.
When they just basically winged hooked each other and tried to guillotine each other.
It's like they're coming out of retirement card, this, isn't it? There's loads of people that have been out for a while.
But I mean, how do you even infer about form or where he's at if you have not fought since 2018? But you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to think. It's difficult to get a read on where he possibly at. You know, you can see he doesn't look particularly. His athleticism doesn't look like it's been coached into him. He's just a big lump with some good power.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like it's been built that way. It looks like potentially that's just who he is. He's a bit of a wild man.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a difference in look to it. Like some people look strong. Like he looks like Dan Strauss. He looks like he's got brawn. Like you know what I mean?
It's
like
strong man strength.
Exactly. Like picking up boulders and that kind of stuff. He looks like he's got that kind of like farm work strength. That's his physique, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like additional bit of body fat, but you can still see that there's a lot of horsepower underneath it.
Pitolo.
I can't have you saying it.
Okay.
Pitolo. Sounds like an instrument.
Pitolo. Yeah, I'm just going to play my pitolo. Pitolo, yeah. Look, maybe he's a bit too tough for his own good. I think if he bites down on his gum shield or goes in there and lets Marquez unload on him, he might have a bit of a rough night, because clearly Marquez has some serious power. Mm. I think his smarter play would definitely not let that happen and manage his range very, very well. Came through the contender series, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's from Hawaii.
Good body work.
Hawaii, yeah. Who did he drop there? It was on the contender series, dropped some of that.
Yeah, Sumter.
Body shot, wasn't it?
Left hook start, bang, bang.
Yeah, four or five in a row, and he just had enough, didn't he?
I mean, like his last fight was August against Kasanganai, and it was three rounds. So even though it wasn't a win, he got a good run out. It's been fairly recent. I mean, we fought back-to-back two fights, didn't he? You got Darren Stewart as well. Like, he fought three times last year. I mean, he picked up two losses, but he was active and he was busy.
I know, but at least you're in there.
Yeah.
Sounds, so then sounds wins a strange
fights,
thing to...
I don't think oftentimes I'm watching Marquez in fights, I'm like, he's doing better than I expected him to here.
Mm. Like, I think this might be another one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I don't necessarily think, if you look at them and where they're at, Pitolo should probably win it, but I think I'd go with Marquez as a bit of a wild card.
So 100% submissions. I've not had a look at these stats on it. I'm not sure how they square up with the... Let me have a look on their records. So what's Pitolo got? So 7 knockouts and 3 submissions on his record, but only one TKO on in the UFC, which is why that's 100%. Right. Whereas on the flip side, you've got Marquez, who's got that front choke over Darren Stewart. But then he's also got that stoppage over Phil Hawes on the Contender Series.
Mm.
And Hawes coming out of Jackson Wink, everyone was like, this is the guy.
Man.
This is the guy. And that was tough and durable, and I'm not going away. You know what I mean? I can unload more bales of hay off this truck than you can, motherfucker. I'm going to keep banging.
Yeah.
It was one of those kind of performances. I think it's an interesting fight. It's just difficult to judge where Marquez is because he's been out for so long.
Yeah, I'm going to wildcard it. I'm going to go with Marquez. He's going to come back with a bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's going to farm a strength into death.
Okay.
Not death, to a victory.
To victory.
Yeah.
This is another veteran game. Listen, look at this.
I think this is my favourite fight on the card.
It might be mine.
And they're rerunning it.
It's just... I mean, both of these guys kind of occupy similar spaces to one another. Similar spaces to the Ricky Simone Brian Kelleher fight lower down the card as well. I mean, this is like, if you're looking at game plans, you could basically replicate these game plans. Like, Ricky Simone is going to play the same game plan as Jimmy Rivera, and Brian Kelleher's got the same game plan as Pedro Munoz. Like, do you want to wrestle? Because I'm going to guillotine you if you do.
Well,
but if you want to stand and trade, I'll happy stand and trade with you.
They're almost
a bit
it's
mirrors.
Almost the same guys fighting, almost fighting each other. Even Munoz and Riviera are like so similar
to one another.
And you know, they're ranked 8th and 9th.
Mm-hmm.
They fought to a split decision. They sort of move the same. They sort of wrestle the same. They sort of strike the same. It's so close.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I think it'll be the standout on the card.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think it was standout on the card. They're,
I still think it's going to be a three rounder though.
Well,
I can still see these guys just working for three rounds.
Yeah.
Like, their striking styles are very, very similar. I'd say that Munoz has probably got a little bit more firepower in his hands, and I would say that Jimmy Rivera's got more diversity in his kicks. Mm. But also, the way that Jimmy Rivera stitches his combinations together is much more fluid than Pedro Munoz. Because that's why he lost against Frankie Edgar. He was just kind of... Okay, he's coming. Whack! Don't missed him. Okay, he's coming. Whack! Missed him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like...
They've both lost to Aljamain, right?
Yeah.
I think they've both lost to Aljamain. Pedro's coming off two losses in a row. So, again, we've touched on it before. It's that flip side of whether he needed to be backed into this corner, and this is where he gets stuff back on track. Or the anxiety of being two on, in a row and having to have a third one, you know, you're just not sure how he reacts to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could make a case that the winner is whoever has leveled up in the 6 years since they last fought.
Yeah.
It was razor thin. Who's done the work? Who's gone out there and, you know, added things to their game that can make the difference?
I think it might come down to volume. And I think it might come down to, because, you know, probably a 15-minute fight, I would say that Rivera throws several strikes instead of throwing single strikes. And I would say that if it does get into a grappling exchanges, that he's going to be the one dictating it, in which case you're going to get Munoz more likely to jump for guillotines than defend takedowns, which means he might start to get takedowns scored against him as well. I think work rate, Jimmy Rivera might do it. And I think that if you look at the records, the volume of fights that Jimmy Rivera has got slightly higher as well. So
just want to note, I've got Rivera written.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not swaying. So I'm going the wrong way. I was already going down this route.
I'm going the
wrong
way.
Just want it noted.
So then I will say this. So if we look at these stats.
Oh, wait, you're flipping it straight back now.
So if we look at these stats, like if we're talking about this being a decision, then it does stack up towards Jimmy Rivera. But Pedro Munoz has got 15 minutes then to find a way to stop him, and he can stop him with strikes or with submissions.
So
Jimmy Rivera's coming in, peppering him, bam, 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 and Pedro Munoz is crack.
Yeah, but do you feel
lands
like...
Lands clean, rocks him, jumps on a guillotine, subs him up against the fence, stacks him into the fence.
I know that narrative, and I know there's some instances where I would agree with that narrative, that it's just a matter of time. You know, us having 15 minutes is just giving me more opportunities to find a way of finishing you. Yeah. I don't feel like that with Jimmy, right? He could finish this. He could land. He puts some power in some of his combinations, and he punches in bunches.
When was the last time you stopped somebody?
Yeah, it might be a while.
It was Marcus Brimage in 2015.
Yeah, that's a long time, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. It's razor thin. Which way did you go? I think it's going to be
you're going with Jimmy
on
Rivera.
Principle, definitely stick
over the
with
distance.
Rivera, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I cannot see that not being an entertaining fight, can you?
No, it'd be a lot of fun.
It'd be beautiful to watch.
I'm looking forward to it. What is it? Oh, 8 and 9, yeah. Yeah, right close next to one another.
Yeah.
They've both jumped at the top of the division and banged their head, haven't they? You
know, yeah.
That's where they're at right now. It don't mean they can't regroup.
Yeah, that's always interesting, right? Is how you've had a crack. Right, how am I going to, if I know I've got to work my way up to getting another crack, but what am I going to do to make sure this just doesn't repeat itself? Mm-hmm. That's a tough spot to be in, isn't it? Because you're almost there. What is the, you know, it's going to be small little changes to your game that's going to make that difference.
And then the next fight is the opposite to that, where you've got Gastelum, who's coming off 3 losses. So he's the one sliding down the tree. And Ian Heinisch is standing at the foot of the tree, jumping up, trying to grab his ankles.
Yeah. I don't think we should be under any illusions. This is a big step up. This is a big step up for Heinisch.
Yeah,
it is. I said to you earlier, I love Kelvin for all the wrong reasons. It's just, he makes no sense at all.
You love him because you're not his coach. And if you were his coach, you would hate him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what Kelvin likes doing?
Eating.
Smoking weed. Eating and fighting. That's what he really likes doing. Really likes doing that. And he's not going to let anything get in the way
of
doing
that. As long
as
he likes Lego, I'm all good. We're very similar people.
If he wasn't professionally fighting, I'm pretty sure he would be smoking weed, eating and fighting.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what he'd
be
doing anyway.
There'd still be all those three things.
He's living his truth right now, and he's not letting any regulations get in the way of that. And luckily, he won't have to anymore.
That's it. There you go.
So he'll be...
For sure. If he wasn't fighting professionally, that would still be what he was doing. He would just also need a side hustle to make money.
Yeah.
Which you definitely have a side hustle as well.
Yeah, for sure. Mate, I used to coach a player called Thomas Waldrum. He was a from New Zealand, incredibly skilled, hated training with a passion, hated it, hated the gym, despised the gym. And he ate like a child. Like if I gave my kids 50 quid and said, just go to the co-op, buy whatever you want, that's how he ate.
Yeah.
That's exactly how he ate. And he was just incredible at his sport.
Yeah.
He was incredible. Like he had his body looked like a melted candle. And he just...
Some people are like that, though.
But he was elite in his sport. Yeah. He was player of the year for 2 years in a row. And he just hated training, produced massive amounts of power when you could get him to do it in the gym. Mm. And he was just like, oh, I don't really like it. Just give me the ball.
I've been trying too hard and been too disciplined over my time, I think. It reminds me of the... we watched Dumb and Dumber the other night. You know the scene where he comes out where he's got like $12 left? And he's like, only buy the essentials. And he comes out and got that massive foam hat on.
Exactly. No idea. Ate like a child, but you know, effectively had a PhD in his sport. And I feel like Gaston's not too far away from that.
Yeah.
He does some really, really nice things. The fight with Izzy, you know, is one of my favourite fights I've ever watched.
Yeah, it was spectacular.
You know, and
he's still a welterweight, though.
I know, you know, we've got the war room out at the minute for Izzy's fight coming up. And you touch on it in there about... Is he trapping you with fakes and just seeing what you're going to do? You know, he flicks that hip a lot, doesn't he? And he just starts reading it, just starts laying that, you know, putting those crumbs out there and seeing which one you're going to get, which one you're going to pick up. And luckily, I did the way that I happened to watch it. I watched the war room and then I went back and watched the Gaston fight with Izzy. And one of the things I saw that Kelvin was doing was not reacting the same way to those feints. So it was...
Not repeating the same
reaction. So he was negating that trap. Uh-huh. So it was like he would flick his hip and he would react one way. He'd flick his hip and react another way. And it was just pouring water on that trap. And I thought it was a really smart and experienced way of dealing with him. And it sort of started to make sense how that fight went the way it did. Because by rights, Izzy should be able to... you know, you would think... He would finish that fight. Mm-hmm. You know, he came pretty, you know.
Yeah, height, reach, speed-wise.
Came pretty close.
Yeah, technical ability, I would say he's probably, I would say Izzy's probably got a better grasp generally on striking than Gastelum, but Gastelum knew enough and he's capable of enough to keep Izzy not overcommitting and getting caught like he did in the first round when his lip got swelled up. But also... like you said, like Gastelum wasn't allowing him to establish any rhythms, any patterns, because he wasn't giving the same reaction. Like something else I put in the, when I was talking about that in the war room, was the clip from the first 30 seconds of Vettori fight. And what I loved about that so much is that Izzy was southpaw, hip feint, got a check reaction.
Noted.
Switched to orthodox, fainted again and got exactly the same reaction from the opposite stance. Like he could have then thrown one other thing to break the rhythm and then gone straight back to that feint and punished him for it.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. I enjoyed your breakdown. I love the insight into that. But it really helped me understand. It made me value Kelvin more because I was like, oh man, you've done really well here.
Yeah.
Because you could have got caught in a lot of traps.
Yeah. I mean, he was literally running through a market square, getting shot at by a sniper.
Yeah, and dodging them all.
Yeah.
But it helps that he's got a gigantic head. It really does help.
Well, we were talking about this yesterday. Like, if you took I've got one here because I always have a toothpick around me. Like, if you snap that in two and stuck that into the bottom of a chicken nugget, like a McDonald's chicken nugget as well, the branding's got to be important because they're kind of cuboid, aren't they? A little bit SpongeBob.
With a little bit of a...
a little bit of a waste.
Hourglass. A bit of an hourglass in there as well. A sloppy hourglass. Yeah.
He's just in a rough spot right now, isn't he, Kelvin? Because he's got those losses in a row, he's had to open the door for someone right at the bottom of the rankings whose confidence is always... It's always high, is Ian Heinisch's confidence. I remember talking to him before one of his fights in Europe, and he was just, I'm just so happy to be here.
And his backstory is wild.
Yeah. Don't transport drugs through customs.
No, it's a terrible idea. I mean, look, he's been in there with people who have some serious power. Like Akhmedov is, you know, he's got some serious power.
Yep.
I'm not sure he's going to, I'm not sure he distributed that power as accurately as Gastelum does and as trickily as Gastelum does maybe, but he's been hit with some serious power. I just think it's a massive step for him and I can't really necessarily see a way to victory for him. You don't know with Gastelum, do you, whether he's coming in super motivated because he's on a bit of a skid or he's just coming in as he always comes in. He's going to do what he always does. And if it's good enough, it's good enough. It's not.
Yeah. One thing I would say about Gastelum striking, though, is it, even at its laziest version, it's good enough. It's good enough to catch people with a good basic skill set like Heinisch.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that might do Heinisch a disservice is that he's good at striking, but he's not great. It would either be better to be great or not that good at all, because then you can have that awkwardness and, you
know, right.
Whereas because he kind of follows general movement patterns, and I mean, he's an orthodox fighter, isn't he, Heinisch? Like, he's going to follow those.
So because of the level he's at, he's more predictable because he's doing what he's coached to be doing. Yes. This is what you're supposed to do. It's like the classic thing in coaching is you have to learn the rules before you're allowed to break them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because if you actually watch the elite level strikers, that's not how people are being taught to strike. But they've been through that whole process of learning all of the things you're supposed to do. Then they've worked out how you're allowed to break these rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand what you're saying. He's just in that mid zone where he's still doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Which then, from an opponent point of view, well, you understand that because, you know, you get those general base techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gastelum's at the stage where he'll throw a strike when it's not necessarily a conscious decision because the target's there and it's been so rehearsed. Into there it is, bang, or you know, whatever it is. Whereas Heinisch, I think everything that he does, he's like, I'm going to do this now. This is the combination I'm going
to
throw.
This is what I'm supposed to do now.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like you see, like there were a bunch of fighters, and I won't mention the coach or the fighters' names because I don't want to criticize them in any way. But you could tell that their striking was all off pads.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And they never ever made the bridge from hitting pads and applying the combinations, because they would stand in the octagon in the cage and they go, okay, 4A. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah,
beautiful.
Lovely
flowing
technique.
Flowing, beautiful, yeah, everything perfect.
Oftentimes didn't land.
Yeah.
Sometimes they would be completely out of range before they even started the combination. And oftentimes they would get hit halfway through the combination and still carry on.
Yeah.
Like not make any adjustments.
Yeah.
And it's like that pad conditioning. Like, I mean, the experience difference is not that great. Like Gastelum's 16-6 and with one no contest. Heinisch is 14-3. But then...
It's not the same.
It's
not the same.
Because the volume... the level of people that Gastelum's been fighting. Yeah. And there's not that much... I mean, Gastelum's normally shorter... in height and reach than his opponent. There's only an inch in it in reach.
I think he'll knock him out.
You reckon Gastelum
will catch
him? I
think he'll knock him out, yeah.
I tell you what, that punch that he landed on Bisping it's always been overlooked as one of the best knockouts.
Mm.
But if you watch the way he does it, the way he pulls himself out of range to allow the punch from Bisping to go, and then he just touches him with his lead hand so as not to push him out of range. It's just like
draws him in. Yeah, I'm working a lot with Jimmy Warlead up at the gym at the minute. He's got.
Is that why you bruised?
That's hence the makeup. Yeah, it's not fun in any way. No. But we're working a lot with one of his prospects. He's got there who's from boxing, and they're constantly talking about just bringing you through into something, and then and they're letting that go. I absolutely love being around him at the minute because his coaching is just elevated. Beyond recognition, and it's actually a blessing just to be able to sit there and just listen to him, watch him go through this process with this young prospect who's gonna absolutely murder some people when we get him to that point.
I can't wait.
But yeah, they're talking about that a lot, about the manipulating. You don't even realize you're being drawn onto something, just whacking you with a thing you haven't even seen coming.
Yeah,
it's beautiful to watch.
Some of my studies this week for Lessons of War have taken me on to Stanley Ketchell, I was telling you about. Because he was known for a particular type of footwork that he used, where he would shift across the center line and switch stances to throw a powerful rear hand, or he'd be in an orthodox stance, he'd throw his right out as a way of disguising him stepping forward and then throw a power left.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people call it the Ketchell or the Ketchell shift. But what was even better about it, which most people never mastered, was that he was good at moving backwards as well.
Right.
So he would throw a punch as you were moving towards him and then step back. And as you're moving forward, he's planting his back foot and throwing his power punch into the space he's left behind.
Beautiful.
It's poetic to watch. Especially when, you know, you've got Anderson Silva, Forrest Griffin. Like, touch him, draw him in, bap, hit him on the way
Bink. In. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's the absorb what is useful, as I said in Warren the other day.
Yeah. I because of the level of sort of mixed martial arts that I actually can physically do, I just have such a high appreciation of that next level of understanding.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to watch.
I saw a good comment on the channel today. It's like, most of this stuff is just, they're just fighting, and like, he's giving them credit for all this stuff afterwards. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, it's the surfer analogy I mentioned the other day.
Mate.
If you're watching something and you can't comprehend the level of analysis that's going on in those fighters' mind, whether it's conscious or subconscious or both, you don't understand what you're watching.
When you watch it on TV, you see certain things happen, you're like, all right, he could have got out of the way of that. When someone is in front of you live, it's happening way faster than you think it's happening.
Yeah.
Way faster. Yeah. And bear in mind, when me and Jimmy spar, I'm like fighting for my life, and he's about 15 to 20% of effort at the time. It happens so quickly, you have no idea. Like, that is the real, if people are watching as a fan, of course, that's amazing. But you have to appreciate that what is happening is as if you have hit that 3 or 4 times on fast forward. It happens so quickly, and you're not reacting the way you think you're going to react to it at all.
No,
it's you just don't get it.
You don't
get it.
One of my favorite knockouts ever, and I've broken this down a few times, is Anderson Silva against Vitor Belfort. And the front kick to the face.
Yeah, why didn't you just move out of the way?
But this is the thing. It's like oh well, it was just a really fast kick that he didn't see coming. It's like, well, it was a fast kick, but there was a reason he didn't see it coming. And the reason was is because he was expecting a low kick, and the fact that Anderson Silva sold him on the low kick with his eyes alone.
Yeah,
is amazing.
That's the other thing. When you step in front of someone and you make eye contact. There's so many things that could be happening right now, and they're going to happen real quick, and you're like, oh my God, I don't even know what to look for right now.
Yeah.
It becomes like a fog in front of you.
I was thinking about this for the main event for the last weekend with Overeem. And you know those scenes in movies where someone's having to climb across something that's really high up and they're afraid of heights?
Yeah.
And they look down, you get that, and it like kind of pans out and makes it look like it's really, really far away. I was just thinking to myself, every time Overeem got caught with the jab in the second round, it must have seemed like that tunnel just got longer and longer, and Volkov was just getting further and further out of reach.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think how he must feel in that moment, but like literally you're there to be hit and you can't touch the guy. Horrible place to be.
Horrible. Nearly as bad as...
The nightmare of fighting someone with a longer reach than you is just being prodded all day long and you can't get near to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm like I've had a bit of a sandy vagina for a year or so, and I've sort of fallen out of love with training and stuff. But I'm just starting to get back into it. Yeah, the irony of that involves Judo Jimmy.
Yeah,
which doesn't make any sense at all. Does it?
That's your problem.
If you're going to fall out of love with training, that normally has something to do with him.
Jimmy Waller is the sandbox.
Yeah,
like he will is quicksand.
Put sand up there.
Which way are you going? You're going with Gastelum, aren't you?
Definitely going with Gastelum. I don't know why I love him. I just love him.
So where's his confidence though on a 3-fight streak?
I don't think he would care, do you?
Would you not? I think he would care. I think he might hide it, but I think he would care.
Though, no, obviously he would care, but I don't feel like he's going to be like, oh my God, I've got my 3-fight, you know, I've got to win this one. I think he's going to come in and do what he does. And
he lost the last one. He shouldn't have lost that one, should he? Who was that to? Was it Joker by heel hook?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
He just didn't, he looked like he was like, oh, no, I'm not dealing with this. I'm not dealing with this.
Leg locks. Doing that. Don't, who said you could do them?
Yeah, right. Co-main.
Yeah.
You locked in Gastelum.
Yeah, locked in Gastelum.
Macy Barber against Alexa Grasso. 100% KOs on one side.
Yeah.
100% decisions on the other.
Yeah.
Grasso's got other... She's got finishes on her record though, hasn't she? Yeah, 4 knockouts, 8 decisions. So Macy, a quarter of her fights, but none of them in the UFC.
Macy Barber fights like she's drank 2 bottles of white wine on an all-dayer. You feel me?
Yes.
And she's got a very, very powerful. I hope she can refine that a little bit, because I think the raw mechanics are there. Very, very strong, very powerful, very athletic. I think she can be a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
She could be a really big problem, but I don't think she's quite got to that point where she's refined that skill set. She got out techniqued by Roxanne quite heavily, didn't she? I bet you love that. That's your narrative, isn't it?
Well,
power athlete gets out techniqued by the technician.
But it's, I mean, that's how it, that is. From a martial artist perspective, that's kind of what you always want to see.
Yeah.
Because you always want to be reassured that no matter how physically outmatched you are, you can overcome with technique.
Yeah.
And like Roxanne's always been up against it when it comes to physicality. And against someone like Macy Barber, I felt like that was even more accentuated. The fact that she was able to kind of subdue her and slow her down.
It was a big win for technique, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a big win for technique, and it was a big win for Modafferi's confidence because she's been around for years as Modafferi. I have a poster, actually. I've just got a frame for it. And it was from one of my early fights in Japan. And she was out there studying, teaching English and learning Japanese when I was fighting in Japan. And she contacted me and she was like, hey, I picked up one of the posters from the tournament if you want me to send it to you.
Before
I'd even met her. Yeah.
Oh, wicked.
Yeah, she's wicked. But she's old school. She's been around for a long time.
So Macy's with Duke Rufus, isn't she?
Yeah.
So you'd think, going back to my initial narrative, that will get refined.
Mm.
You know, that will get refined over time. She's still pretty young.
As a coach, you're looking at an athlete like that, and you're like, "Oh, this is
all day."
She's born 1998.
To coach that kind of power and athleticism into her, is going to take that's a lifetime of work to get to that level.
Yeah.
But you've got that, and to refine that into a technical output, I think is more than doable.
Yeah.
I think it'd be Robbie's hand ready to go with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's going to even be even more open to that after coming off a loss where she was out techniqued by someone that physically she should have been able to.
Yeah, that might handle. Have switched something for her.
Yeah,
they tested her ACL. I'm not sure if it was her last fight or not, but they did so when you're assessing an ACL, you do an anterior draw test where you sort of hold their knee and you pull their lower shank to see if that ligament is intact or not. It's called the anterior draw test. They did that in fight on Macy. I have never seen that ever before. I'll pull it out and show you. I'm pretty sure it can't have been the Roxanne fight. It must have been the fight before.
What, because the leg was in?
She wobbled on it. She wobbled on it quite badly, and then she was really tentative on it. And I think maybe there's only 20 or 30 seconds left in the round. They went to the corners. The cornerman went out of the ring, and then the doctor came in and did the draw test.
Huh.
And it's
weird.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
No, especially not during a fight.
And yeah, very strange. I've just never seen that before.
That was weird.
Yeah, I'll show you later.
Yeah. So which way are you going with this one? Like Grasso's, I mean, her average fight time's 13-15. So she's like she's averaging over two rounds.
Mm. She's coming up to flyweight. I think she's had one up flyweight, isn't she?
Let's have a question.
I think she's come up.
Flyweight debut was her last fight.
Yeah.
Jiyoung Kim.
And Macy seems like a powerful flyweight. I think that might play into it a little bit.
Yeah.
She got out wrestled by Tatiana pretty badly, didn't she?
By Tatiana, she did. But I didn't. I was there for the Esparza fight, and I thought that might have been a bad decision, to be honest. I mean, Esparza got pelted with drinks on the way out of the arena.
Oh, really?
Yeah, bad. Like, soaked, pelted. Like, people were throwing beers and all kinds of stuff. She's a cruise to a decision with good boxing, good striking. It is basically what you're going to find from Alexa Grasso. And I think the surge forward from Macy Barber and that physical strength and power that she brings, it might make this flyweight feel like a bantamweight.
Heavyweight, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Macy down to win it. That's not to say that Grasso couldn't.
No.
But I think she might get overawed by the sheer athleticism of Barber.
I mean, the thing is with Grasso, like if you look at her record, like Heather Jo Clark, Randa Markos, Karolina Kowalkiewicz, and Jiyoung Kim, like they're all good technical fighters. They're not really physically imposing,
yeah.
But they're all like, you know, they put their skills together well. Markos has got a good ground game. She's effective with her striking. Kowalkiewicz has got great kickboxing, as we know. Jiyoung Kim's long and awkward, and she's, you know. She could quite easily kind of take her to school a little bit, use her footwork. She might have to get through a couple of rough patches in the early round, but she might be able to prove and jab.
Been,
and
she's been whacked a few times, and she kept coming.
Yeah, she's only been stopped once with choke, hasn't she, Suarez? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even Carla whacked her a few times, didn't she? She landed some clean shots on her, and she took them.
They've put this on the fight. They've put this on the card in the co-main event because one of these is going to launch themselves with a big victory. So another thing to bear in mind is pressure, and which one's going to deal with the pressure bigger? Macy Barber's the one that's coming off a loss.
Yeah,
and she's stepping in there with someone that that is, you know, technically very good.
Yeah, it's close. I still think, despite your best efforts, I still think Macy will, she'll come through and take that.
Go on then. We'll lock that one in. Main event.
Lock it in.
I'm saying nothing for this one.
Well, I mean...
Watch War Room, right?
Yeah, I've watched the War Room. It's difficult to comment when you've broke it down to that level. I mean, the funny thing is, no one really particularly enjoys Kamaru being champ, right? But charisma is not a necessary aspect to be champion. If you want to be if you want to be a legend, and if you want to be something more than the champ, then potentially that's what you need. And there's a bit of a charisma bypass going on, but that doesn't discount him from being exceptional at what he does. Like, he's genuinely exceptional at what he does. 16 back-to-back wins. He's going to be going in there thinking, it's tough to beat me. Mm-hmm. It's really tough to beat me. And you know, like you said, you've broken it down in a lot more detail, but he doesn't have a complete game by any means. But at time and time again, we come back to the wrestling component of MMA dictates a lot of the outcome. It's the glue that you stick everything else to it, because it dictates where the fight takes place. Even if you look at their records, Usman's record is incredible. Who he's fought is incredible. There's name after name after name after name. You know, Gamebred, Dos Anjos, Tyron, Maya, Gunny. You know, it's very, very impressive. I think he's not necessarily, you know, my kind of fighter. He's not someone that I'm like, oh yeah, oh man, I can't wait to watch Usman fight this weekend. But I respect and appreciate how elite he is at what he does. And in, you know, he is risk averse. You can see that in the way he fights. And also, wrestling is the best component of MMA if you're risk averse. You know, it gives you that buffer of control. Again, like you touched on the War Room, it'd be fascinating to see how the training partner thing plays in. Like, you just get to know each other so well, don't you? Mm-hmm. And he must have in the back of his mind, there's a couple of things that Burns does. He'll be thinking, I bet he doesn't even know he does these things, but I know he does these things. And then, you know, conversely, I'm sure Burns thinks the other way. You know, he must have lit him up occasionally in training and what have you. It's a very complex. It's a very complex narrative. There's a lot going on. If they had never met each other and never trained together, it's quite an interesting clash of styles. Then you layer on the fact that Kamaru is 16 straight, you know, has beaten some serious names. Then you layer in the fact that these two have trained together for a significant amount of time. Where'd you go? My gut feel is Kamaru is too good at what he does for him not to win. That doesn't mean that I want him to win, but I think he's too good at what he does and too confident in what he does to lose this. And then, you know, the flip side of that is, does, you know, with Burns and his kicking game, does he come in and, you know, pepper his calf kicks, pepper his legs? Is he going to risk those calf kicks because that's going to lead to him able to be tucked down and put on his back? He's not that bothered about being put on his back, but ideally, is that really where you want to be with Kamaru in top position? Yeah, man, it's a tough fight to call, isn't it?
It is. I think that Gilbert Burns' skills bookend Kamaru Usman's in that, I'm not saying Kamaru's not got good striking, but he doesn't throw with the same kind of intention and intensity that Gilbert Burns does. He's very good at placing his jab, and he's very good at kind of using his jab to manage people like he uses his clinch to manage people. Gilbert Burns, because of his tenacity and his intention, it makes him a little difficult to predict and also a bit difficult to control in that way. And a Burns will know the ways into his guard, just like he knows the ways into his ground game. Just like Kamaru Usman will know what to expect from Gilbert Burns and how to shut down his attacks.
Yeah.
But that's the point of difference between the two. Is Burns is going, I know where vulnerabilities are that I can attack. And Kamaru Usman's going, I know what vulnerabilities are going to attack and I know how to stop him.
Yeah.
So it's like if you give both of them a game plan, a priority, Usman's priority is control and then attack.
Yeah.
Gilbert's is the other way around.
Attack first. Yeah.
And like we were talking about with Fahea and Benil Dariush, that over five rounds, I think, is where the attacking mentality starts to overcome. Because he's not fighting for points on scorecards. He's fighting to find a finish. Mm. So as long as he's constantly searching for the finish, he's constantly taking risks to find a finish. And I don't necessarily think that Kamaru Usman's a guy that you can't take risks against because he's not a devastating puncher. Like Sergio Moraes practically falls in half when you punch him anyway. And the Colby Covington fight, I know I know a lot of people considered it to be controversial. I don't think it was. I thought Colby Covington was done at that point. But the point that the amount of punches that he had to take to be done is not the same kind of punches you have to take to be done against Gilbert Burns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Burns doesn't throw many straight punches, but he throws long and he throws wide, kind of like JDS.
Mm.
And he clubs you with the ends of his arms like a ball on a chain.
It's very much that athlete fighter paradox that we've touched on privately and on this show a few times. You know, Burns is heavily in that fighter group.
He's a competitor.
Yeah, and Usman is heavily in that athlete group.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's, you know, stylistically, it makes it very, very interesting.
Yeah.
It's still incredibly difficult to call.
It is very, very difficult to call. Usman's not coming in to fight, which I think emotionally gives him the advantage. But then I'll counter that immediately by saying that the disadvantage of coming in and being a competitor is that you know that you don't have that fight if it's needed.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the thing is with this, it's five rounds. That's what makes it most interesting. Because these guys know each other so well. Like I don't necessarily think that Gilbert Burns is going to be too far behind Kamaru Usman when it comes to conditioning.
Hmm.
And I think the fact that he's not adamant on controlling and defending means that he can kind of flow through positions where most people would try and stop Kamaru Usman taking them down. Burns will just roll with it. Like when Damian Maia tried to take Gilbert Burns down. Like Usman stuffed like 40-odd takedowns of Damian Maia's. Gilbert Burns attacked his ankle.
Yeah.
Like Maia went to take him down and Burns rolled attack. For an ankle lock.
Attack mentality, yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting. So Usman, you know, he's clearly a five-round fighter. He can do that every day of the week. But he must be managing his energy to make sure he can go five rounds. This would be an incredibly high-risk strategy, but if you went in there and made him fight at a pace that he doesn't normally fight at, whether or not you could rattle him a little bit in the, no, we're going at this pace now, and then he's thinking, oh, I'm not sure if I got this for five rounds, and I fight over five rounds, whether he could come in and just pressure and pressure and pressure and pressure and pressure and force him into operating at a tempo that he's not used to operating at.
Mm-hmm.
But he... You know, he's been around and...
I mean, that's the thing with Usman, is he's very, very good at what he does.
Hmm.
He doesn't use a lot to do what he does, though. He uses a good jab, he uses decent footwork, and then he uses clinch work and wrestling against the fence. That's the thing, is if a pace is put on him and if he's forced to work, then there's going to be a lot of elements of the fight that he can't control, which will make him uncomfortable, which will have a knock-on in his cardiovascular system.
Yeah, the more we sort of... unpack this a little bit, the more I think that might be a strategy for him. is that you have to make him fight at a pace that he's not used to. Otherwise, he's control. Like what's his main thing is control. Controlling space and distance, controlling where the fight happens, controlling the tempo of the fight. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what do you do with someone that craves control is take the control away from them.
Mm-hmm. And kind of touching on what you said earlier about Gastelum when he faced Izzy. Like, Kamaru Usman's skill set is quite basic. So you can have a go-to or two or three go-tos for each thing that he does. So, like, if you're thinking, okay, I'm at distance, I'm expecting him to throw a jab over and over again. Like, give yourself five different options to put him off doing that jab.
Mm.
Like, he throws a jab, you split the jab and go down the pipe and hit him with a split jab. Next time he throws it, you come over the top with a power right hand. Doesn't need to land. It needs to scare him enough so he doesn't want to just keep throwing it at his own pace.
And it's ruffling the control again.
Yeah. Level change. Yeah. Like, that's another thing. Is it, like...
That'd be a turn up, wouldn't it?
It would, but it wouldn't surprise me either. Yeah. Like the psychological games that they're going to be playing with each other and with themselves. But like Gilbert Burns, I think he's going to come in and he's going to be like, I know what Kamaru's good at. I know he's a good wrestler. I know he wants to control me and beat me up steadily over 25 minutes. If you're Kamaru Usman, you're like, he's good on the ground.
Mm.
And every time he shot him for a takedown, if I stuffed it, he was pulling guard. He was on my back. He was Of all the training sessions that they had, 10% of those training sessions might have been rough for Kamaru Usman and 90% of them might have been rough for Burns.
Yeah, well, I was just, as you were saying that.
The very fighter mentality means that Burns is like, yeah, but I'll find a way to win.
Yeah.
I'll find a way to win.
The competitive mentality is like, overrules everything.
What if I don't find a way
to win? There's a lot, Burns is in a position where he can play a lot more games to Kamaru than Kamaru is to Usman. Mm. Than Kamaru is to Burns, I feel.
First thing I do is come out in the opposite stance.
Yeah.
First thing off, just, oh, hang on. That's not comfortable.
Come in the opposite straight stance away. And shoot a double straight off the back.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Why not?
He has to keep him guessing. He has to perturbate the level of control. I know you're going to like that. Perturbate the level of control that's in there. Just give it a little shake.
We love a new word.
And just put him off. You know, put him off kilter, and I think he could come through and do that. How, having said all of that, I have put down that Usman will do what Usman does to the point where he will get a decision victory over five.
Perturbate.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm really, really hoping it's the right word.
No, you're right. Yeah, when you perturb someone, it makes them feel. It makes them feel anxious.
Yeah,
well, mental uneasiness.
What a great selection of vocabulary.
Perturbate. I don't know, is that actually a word or is it? Perturbation is a word.
Yeah.
So perturbate would probably make sense. Yeah, yeah, I like
it's
that.
It's got to be something. There you go.
Let's throw that one back in.
There you go. We invented language, so.
We do. Yeah, no one on this card's got Colorado, have they?
No, they do. Ooh. They do. Isn't Heinisch from Colorado?
Oh, is it? That makes sense. That makes sense.
I've written down in my notes he's got Colorado.
Colorado, yeah, nice. Okay, go on then. Main event. Which way are you going?
Yeah. I'm gonna go with the champ. I think he'll
safe.
Keep it safe. I do. I also 16 fight like control. Win streak, my life is control. I do like control in general.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Fun. It'll be a fun card.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And all the prelims as well. Make sure you tune in for the prelims because there's some bangers all the way down the card.
Jump on the app, get the app, play along with us, and you can check out the leaderboard again if you really want to.
There it is.
There you go.
There it is.
Oh, where's the leaderboard?
Pow. I'm not pulling the leaderboard up. I knew you wouldn't do that. Wicked.
Episode done. Four in the bag.
Catch you later. Enjoy the fights. See you next time.